Hi, this is Stacey Clardy, editor of the Neurology Podcast. In this week's special report, I had the pleasure of talking with Chloe Hill about her paper bringing to light increasing out-of-pocket costs for neurology clinic visits and related diagnostic tests. I hope you'll find it not only informative, but also useful in approaching these conversations with all of your patients. We're also including an extra CME question with this special report in case you need some extra CME, in addition to our usual weekly episode CME. Enjoy.
I'm Stacey Clardy from the Salt Lake City VA and University of Utah. Today I'm speaking with Chloe Hill from the University of Michigan about her paper in neurology titled Increasing Out-of-Pocket Costs for Neurologic Care for Privately Insured Patients. And in this study, Chloe and her colleagues looked at a database of insured patients and analyzed the out-of-pocket costs associated with their neurologic testing and care over a 15-year period. Now, we've talked on the podcast a number of times about some of the costs and financial issues faced by patients when it comes to medications used to treat neurologic disease. But in this study, Chloe turned the lens onto the costs associated with patients' interactions with us as neurologists, including many of the tests we use in routine diagnostic workups. Chloe, thanks for taking some time to talk with us about this today.
Thank you.
So before jumping into the results, I wanted to hear a little more about the rationale and background for the study. You describe in your introduction the concept of a moral hazard theory as it relates to the association between patient costs and their seeking of medical care. Can you teach us a little more about this term? I love the term, but I want to learn more about it. Why is it valuable for us to be informed about the costs our patients face when it comes to their health?
Yeah, moral hazard is an interesting term, and it's an economic term used to describe how behavior is impacted by risk. When we apply to healthcare, we think about insured patients perhaps using more healthcare if they're not personally paying for it out of pocket, so they're not at risk of the cost. And that particularly is important when thinking about out-of-pocket costs and whether or not patients face out-of-pocket costs when they seek healthcare. In experiments that have looked at this, it has been seen that patients do tend to use less care if they face out-of-pocket costs for their care and less if they face high out-of-pocket costs for their care. However, it's important to understand that in these scenarios, not only are patients perhaps not using care that is unnecessary, but they also may be deterred from seeking health care that's appropriate and important to their well-being.
You and your colleagues explored the costs more specifically associated with E&M codes, so the codes we use to bill for our visit, as well as common diagnostic tests that we use in neurology, MRIs, EMGs, EEG, even polysomnograms, CT scans. And so you evaluated these costs in patients with private insurance from 2001 to 2016, that time period, comparing to an inflation index, which begins to get above my head a little bit. So can you break this down and tell me what you found about the trend of out-of-pocket costs over time?
Absolutely. So we're looking at several different things, but the big trend is out-of-pocket costs are increasing. And I'll get down into the specifics a little bit. So we looked at E&M or office visits for this period from 2001 to 2016, as you said, and we found that over that time, the majority of patients were paying out-of-pocket costs for E&M visits, so over 85%, and that stayed around the same for the study period. During this time, if we looked at diagnostic tests, so MRI, EEG, polysomnogram, et cetera, that actually increased. So the proportion of patients at the start of the study period who were paying out-of-pocket costs was around 25%, and that increased over the study period to around 50 to 60% for these tests. So not only are more patients being asked to pay an out-of-pocket cost for these tests, but the magnitude of that out-of-pocket cost is increasing. And this, as you said, is even when it's adjusted for inflation. For patients who had an out-of-pocket cost, we found that that out-of-pocket cost increased over this period by about 100 to 200%, even when adjusted for inflation.
So you're really giving us the data to support what we've seen. And there's a big difference between E&M code bills and then all the procedures, right? So the fact that a higher percentage of people are now contributing to these procedures, this isn't apples to apples, right? Because presumably the E&M codes on average are a cheaper expense than all these procedures. Is that right?
That's exactly right. So if we look at the numbers that we're finding, although the majority of patients, as I said, over 85% are paying an out-of-pocket cost for an office visit, that cost is lower. So the mean out-of-pocket cost in 2016 for an office visit was $50. Not surprisingly, the out-of-pocket cost for diagnostic tests, while experienced by fewer patients, but still roughly half, is more substantial. So as an example, in 2016, the mean out-of-pocket cost for MRI was about $250, and for polysomnogram was about $150. What's really interesting and important for us to know is that there is great variability in these out-of-pocket costs across patients. So we were looking within one insurer, UnitedHealthcare. Even if we looked at one particular test within 1 year, we were seeing variation in what patients were being asked to pay. So another example, in 2016, looking at MRI, about a third of patients had zero out-of-pocket costs for that procedure, but the 50th percentile paid around $100, and the 95th percentile paid around $900 out-of-pocket for an MRI.
So that was, you know, you're giving the example of one insurer. Was that different tiers of a plan with an insurer?
Great question. So we next tried to understand what were predictors of having an out-of-pocket cost and then having a high out-of-pocket cost. And we looked at several factors. And the most compelling and consistent one that we found was plan structure, exactly as you said, and in particular, having a high deductible health plan. So not surprising, but we found that patients with a high deductible health plan, they were both more likely to have an out-of-pocket cost for a test and more likely to have a high out-of-pocket cost for a test. And this is increasingly relevant as the number of patients with high deductible health care plans is increasing over time.
Wow. So there's a lot in that answer. And this is a really personal thing, right? This is something that physicians can understand directly because, hey, you know, all clinicians get sick. All clinicians have to choose a healthcare plan. Some pay out of pocket if they're self-employed. Some are choosing from plans from an employer. And this does hit home because, you know, I think about every year, these mental gymnastics we play, right? Do I go with a high deductible health plan? That's even a luxury to think you can choose it in the first place for some people because it implies that you don't have a huge catastrophic expense coming up, right? But there's this sense that you're gambling. And what you're telling me with this data is that it really truly is a gamble that people take with these high deductible health plans. You know, you try to do a risk benefit, but how do you predict if somebody's going to end up in the hospital in the next 12 months, right? And is that going to be a catastrophic expense? You have me going in circles with this data. And it does make me wonder, you know, I increasingly really try to bring this up in the course of every visit when I'm proposing a costly medication or a costly test with my patients. And certainly all of us clinicians are aware when plans roll over because we get tons of calls from our patients, you know, saying, oh, can I get this scheduled before X, before the first of this month kind of thing. So is there a better way for me to tell? When I look at our medical record, I can see if there's an insurance plan, but I can't tell if it's a high deductible health plan necessarily on the cover sheet. Tell me what you do, and is there an easy way to tell?
So that's a great question. I think, you know, the point of all of this is sort of, so what? What can we do about this? And I think there's several approaches. The most important one is obviously within the clinic, in our office visit, what can we do with the patients? My co-authors and I did propose some more complex ways to do this, such as flagging the chart of patients in the EMR who have a high deductible health plan, or having the EMR communicate with the insurer's platform to try to follow in real time the patient's deductible and get a real accurate individualized fee estimator. I think all these things would be incredibly helpful, but they're not yet available and would require a lot of time and investment to develop them. I think, as you said, honestly, the most important first step is just to have a conversation with patients about their insurance plans and talk to them about where they stand with their deductible. Some patients know that, some patients don't. And also think about that and think about if you have an opportunity to encourage a patient to talk to their insurer to understand better what costs they might see after getting one of these tests.
Yeah, that's some great practical advice. I do try to do this now. So often it's after the fact, but in terms of forward thinking. So it's after one of our patients has had what you'd call a catastrophic event, right? A hospitalization. And so if they have the opportunity, I do say to them, if I think this is going to have long-term ramifications, hey, look at certain variables the next time you have a chance to do an open enrollment or, you know, change plans. But as you say, beyond that, even if I know their plan, right, it's so challenging. There's no transparency, right? I so want to answer the questions when they say, how much is this going to cost? But I'm at a loss. I don't know. Have you ever been able to easily and accurately get a patient an answer to that question when they say, how much is this MRI going to cost me?
I think it's very hard to know in advance. And I think that you make a really good point that price transparency is critical here. There is a movement towards publishing costs of care and towards institutions and facilities publishing their costs of care. But as you and I know, that charge rarely is individualized to the patient in front of you. So So I actually worry that people may have a false sense that they do know what to expect, and then it turns out to be hugely different after the procedure's done or the hospitalization's completed. And so it's a very challenging area. I think that speaks also to the second point about why this is important to understand, even in a descriptive study like my own, that we need to understand that there is a potential financial burden associated with some of our neurologic testing that we prescribe for patients. I was particularly struck by one finding. When we tried to sort of benchmark how problematic these costs could be, we looked to the 2018 Federal Reserve Survey of Households, and that found that 30% of American households do not have sufficient savings to cover an unexpected $400 expense. So using that benchmark of $400, we found in recent years about 8% of patients in our study had out-of-pocket expenses of $400 or more for their neurologic testing. And that's just one individual, just neurologic testing. You're not thinking about the other healthcare that they may be using and the rest of their household. So I think we really need to understand that there is the possibility of a financial hardship from testing that we're ordering.
I'm so glad that you're doing this work and that you've published this work. It really is not overstating it to say this is a crisis, I think, for our country. And it's a tough area to know where to act and how to act as a clinician on a day-to-day basis with a limited amount of time with each patient. And the scope of this problem is literally all across the board. You know, I'll give you one example, Chloe, you made me think of when you're just talking. You know, I'm a neuroimmunologist and we frequently check vitamin D levels. And I was just reading an article about how many plans, including common ones, don't cover the cost of that test. And thinking to myself, my goodness, you know, this is almost 100% hit rate in a lab that's ordered in a neuroimmunologist's office. And, you know, people can get an $80 bill for just that single blood test. And so it really, you know, gave me pause saying, well, it's an important test. We order it for a reason. It's so commonly ordered for a reason. You know, we have data showing that it can affect outcomes in some of our conditions. But yet, if I'm checking that twice a year, that's $160 right there. And I don't know if my patient is one who's not going to have that covered, right? So that the scope of this, that's just one tiny example, right? A single blood test, let alone the expensive studies, right? Again, neuroimmunology, we order a lot of MRI brains to track treatment efficacy, right? The magnitude of this is enormous. So tell me, what do you do in your clinic visit on a day-to-day basis? Because you have expertise in this. What do you say to your patients when you're proposing, say, an evaluation that's going to involve both an MRI and an EEG, and you're going to order 10 lab tests? What do you tell that patient?
It's a great question. And I wish I had a better answer because this is now on my mind. And I do worry about it when I see patients and order expensive tests. I, as any provider, always aim to be judicious when ordering these tests. But now this information is in the back of my head. I try to be even more discriminating. Certainly, we wouldn't withhold care or withhold diagnostic evaluation that we think is warranted. I do think it's really important to discuss with patients to have an understanding of their insurance status and, if possible, where they stand with their deductible so that you might be able to plan care at a time that's advantageous for them. And then this is a small point, but something I find myself doing more now is thinking about if there's sufficient recent testing, perhaps in another hospital system that I can personally review. Whenever appropriate, I try very hard to obtain that rather than ordering repeat testing within our healthcare system.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. And this is a separate discussion too then about the burden that you and I both place on our staff tracking down all of the outside records, but absolutely.
That's another expense.
Right. This is probably, in my opinion, one of the more important podcasts we're going to do this year. I'm glad to see that you're doing the research to provide the data. I hope you'll continue to lead the charge. I know the American Academy of Neurology has placed a lot of emphasis on weighing in and trying to address this as an increasingly tremendous problem for all of our patients. And so I want to thank you for the work you're doing. I want to thank you for talking to us. And I can't wait to see what you'll do next to help fix this problem.
Thank you so much for having me.
The views and opinions of the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the journal Neurology or the AAN. Disclosures of the participants are included in the show descriptions, reached by a link on the neurology.org website.